हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Shankya offers five arguments to prove the existence of Purusha. First of all, the objects of the world are meant to be utilized by and for someone other than themselves. All things that exist simply serve as the means for the ends of other beings. A chair is not made for the chair itself, nor is a house made for the house itself. Therefore, there must be something quite different and distinct from such objects. Objects cannot enjoy their own existence, nor can one material object be utilized and enjoyed by another material object. Therefore, there must be some other enjoyer of the objects. That enjoyer who utilizes the objects of the world is conscious, Purusha.
Okay, we understand that first thing.
So you're establishing the material energy, that's Prakriti, but it's unconscious. And one item, one can't please itself. Like that, its purpose is not to please itself. Its purpose is for pleasing someone else. And then taking it that it's someone else, that someone else can't be another object of dead matter. So that must mean that it's for something else that's conscious, right? And one thing, when it's utilized, it becomes actually what produces the result for somebody else. Right? In other words, the subject applied on the object gets you the result. The subjective on the, what is it? Objective, or what's the other thing called? Accusative, gets your dative. Right? So result is coming only when it's applied on someone else. That's a very important element also that kind of ruins our whole theory. Is, you know, of being the supreme controller and enjoyer, is that whatever you do, whatever you apply it on, the result is something separate. It's not the activity. It's not the person applying the activity. It's not even the person the activity is applied on. It's something separate. So that something separate then is actually enjoyed by someone else or enjoyed by that person. So those two can enjoy the result, but the result is actually based on the enjoyment of the person you apply it on. Right? If you're not, then you're dealing actually with dead matter. Or if it's people, you're dealing with them like dead matter. Therefore, people get upset. Does this make any sense? So that means it has to be conscious. So on this level, then it appears that they're just going to take it to the level that Purusha means the jiva. Like that. Whether they separate it as a particular particle or soul, but the living entity is the Purusha. Now here we know, in the principle, dead matter can't be enjoyed by dead matter. And that the result can't be the object, desired or needed by dead matter, because it's unconscious. That means the gross and subtle bodies, which are technically dead matter, it has to be for someone else. Like that. So even there, it can't be for the body and senses and that which the jiva thinks it's for, right? So it has to be beyond that. So in the living entity, therefore, would have to be situated in the transcendental state where its purpose is not to be actually the Purusha, because its being Purusha is being applied through dead matter. Does this make sense? So the jiva can't actually be Purusha because they're applying this enjoying propensity or controlling propensity through dead matter. And one object of dead matter can't be the goal or result, bring pleasure to other dead matter. You understand? So technically speaking, your senses don't care what they bump into. what they're involved with, what they're engaged with. It's the jiva who has his plans on what kind of sensual interaction they would call pleasurable and what they wouldn't. But the senses don't care. You know what I'm saying?
It's not the mind, the conditioned mind.
Conditioned mind, but it's what the soul identifies with. You know what I'm saying? But the mind, we have to remember, is dead matter. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
And we hear that these senses become spiritualized. They become, they're dirty, and by cleansing them, then they become spiritualized. So, therefore, they're always spiritual. So how can they be dead matter? How can the subtle body be considered dead matter if when they're cleansed or spiritualized, then they become spiritual senses?
Because you means it'll transform into that, but it's not doing that. It means you're spiritualized what senses you have here, but when they become actually spiritual, that's when you're dealing with your original form. Does that make sense? The senses in your spiritual body, those are spiritual. The ones in your material body are material, but they can be spiritualized. But so the difference between them is your consciousness. So when your consciousness is actually on that liberated platform, then you can deal with the spiritual senses. It's not, see, the thing is that's not the important element. I mean, it's a useful question, but it's not actually the important focus. The idea that we're going to get at here is that then the point is the soul only thinks the one object applied on another that will bring pleasure is for their satisfaction. So this element, it only works in the material world where one thing is on dead matter. So dead matter doesn't matter what dead matter it bumps into. Like this rock is not caring whether it's here, it's on the table, it's on the wall. It just doesn't care. So that means then technically the sense object, you know, all that, it just doesn't really matter. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, you understand we're taking a particular perspective here. So then from that, then that means this whole engagement of the senses doesn't actually have any meaning because it's just matter on matter. So that means you're not actually dealing with the Purusha. If you're actually dealing with the soul, but the soul is identifying as the body and senses. So it's not actually for the soul on the platform of being soul. You understand? This is going to be the difference between our presentation and what's presented here. Because here what they're doing is taking it up to the soul because the soul is identifying with it, but they're not worrying about that at this point. Is that, therefore, it's the soul that's enjoying matter. Matter can't enjoy matter because it's unconscious. So the soul's enjoying. What we're saying is the soul's enjoying through unconscious matter. So actually, by their own definition or by the definition of Shankhya, the one material object cannot be the source of happiness of another material object because they're unconscious. So that means technically, then the material body and senses, mind, all these different things, the gross and subtle body, then actually can't be the enjoyer. But we identify with them as the enjoyer because we identify that that is us. You understand? We identify that my sense is the enjoyer. Like that, but it's something else actually, because it can't be because it's dead matter. So that would mean then the soul on the transcendental platform technically then could be the enjoyer, but on the transcendental platform then they're not the enjoyer. They understand that they're actually in the constitutional state that they're the enjoyed. So they simply become an instrument for that process for the enjoyment of Krishna, right? So right now we're trying to put ourselves in the position of the subject. Because the subject technically should be the enjoyer of the result. Right? Means through the meaning of the activity applied on the object. Right? But the jiva is not in that position because they're not actually controlling all the movement and everything. That's actually under the control of the Lord and His energies. So therefore, the Purusha and the Prakriti actually there then are the Lord as the cause, and the Prakriti, you know, or is the effect. Right? Only we are dealing with the basically the dead matter. You know what I'm saying? because the chit shakti is not going to interact with it, us as internal potency if we're trying to enjoy her. She's going to act with us as dead matter. You know what I'm saying? So then that would mean that our actual position is in the position of servant. So the servant means they serve through the service. Right? So that the living entity connects themselves to the service, which is the verb. Right? And so in this case, when the subject and object is something else, right? They're the controller of and the receiver of the service. So we're neither of those. We're not the result. We're not the place. We're not the cause. So what does that leave for us?
Instrumental.
Yeah, the instrumental, because that's the only other noun that's connected to the verb, is the instrumental. So our position is, in the instrumental case, serving the subjective in its application on the accusative to get the result, the dative, that is pleasing specifically to the subjective, that is also then according to the pleasure of the, you know, objective. Does that make sense? Right. So, I guess, depending on looking around, so basically speaking, with this explanation, you either have to be well educated in English or know a language other than English. Does that make sense? It means you don't have to be well educated to understand this in any other language other than English. But if it's English, you have to be well educated, because otherwise you forget all this, because I think they taught this to you, what, in fourth grade or something, and who cares? You know.
I never learned it at school.
You never learned it at school?
Came here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Me too.
Pick it up from Sanskrit.
I remember them teaching us this.
Generational.
Yeah, but that was still when the concept of connecting English to Latin was still not dead yet. But from what I understand now, they don't even make that connection.
They teach us a lot of grammar in French because we have a lot of grammar.
Yeah, but then from there, then you have grammar, so then you have to deal with all these cases.
Yeah, because you need the grammar to write the words properly. When in English you don't, you had an S at the third person. That's about how much grammar there is.
Yeah, like that. Yes.
A large part of the material consciousness is thinking oneself a possessor. So the sixth type, possessive, has no relation to the activity.
Yeah. The possessing is not part of the verb. Sorry?
Could you please say something about that? The consciousness of living entity as the possessor, no relation to activity at all.
Yeah. Now that's an interesting point. Yeah, because the possessive actually is, it means in Sanskrit it would be in the sixth case, but in the overall placement in your, what do you call it? You know, that there's the nouns, there's all these different
things.
No. They define the definition of them. The elements of the thing. There's a name for it. In English, they call them eight. They think there's eight, but there's actually 24. The eight. You know, you have nouns, verbs, adverbs, parts of speech. So in the parts of speech, then the possessive, though it's a noun, is actually a secondary noun. It's a noun in support. In other words, it has to be connected to the primary nouns. Like that. And so only the primary nouns are connected to the verb. So as a secondary noun, it has to be connected to one of the primary nouns to actually be functioning. Like that. It doesn't function on its own. You can be possessed, be in a mood of possession, but you can't affect that possession except through connecting it to a primary noun, which is connected to the verb. So it all goes back to the activity. So our position then means our possessiveness is as instrumental. And because the instrument then is applied by the subject, but the application of the verb has to be according to the nature of the object. So that means then our consideration and practical application is the object. So only when the object is happy, then that work has been done properly. Then only you'll get the result, which is what the subject wants. Right? But of course, in the relationship, more important is the interaction than the result. Right? Like that. It means we may look and think it's the dative that's the thing, but the dative is actually a medium only for the expression. So because of the dative, you have an excuse for the verb. Right? And so then the possessive has to be connected there. So our possessiveness then means our possessiveness would be in our performance of our duties according to the pleasure of the internal potency that will give the proper results to please Krishna. That's the only way we can function.
It's interesting that in Sanskrit the word to am doesn't exist. They'll use a possessive case. It's a case, it's not a verb.
Okay.
Well, in English it did, and it's like...
Yeah, that's interesting. Is that what you're talking about? Yeah, so that's why it's important to understand the grammar. Because the grammar then will establish the... it actually shows how you're communicating something that is valuable, you know, that is truth. So that means the language itself must be able to communicate that. So that means what you're communicating either is proper tattva or proper rasa. That means language is able to deal with both. So language is controlled by grammar. So that means the grammar actually has to be able to reflect all the aspects of philosophy, you know, both in tattva and rasa.
So it's based on the same skeleton.
It's the same thing. All it is the same thing just being presented through communication, you know, through language. Like that. Yes.
Something that has to be inherent in the language.
It has to be inherent because an effect can't be something different than is coming from the cause because the effect is transformed cause. Right? So that means that the effect is able to produce that means because it's there in the cause. So language itself, you know, is you know, you can say has the same elements of, in other words, the ability, the communicative medium has to be, have elements of what is being communicated, otherwise how can it communicate? You know what I'm saying? In other words, there has to be a common element if anything's going to work together. They must have common basis. You know what I'm saying? The fragrance and your nose are connected because they both are working on that principle of smell. You know, so the element of the earth has to be prominent there. Otherwise, how does it work? You know what I'm saying? You know, the skin is touch, so it has to be based on air, otherwise it can't work. You know what I'm saying? The sight has to be based on fire. That's why your eyes, they work with bile. Otherwise it can't function. It has to work with fire, because it's fire that creates form. You know what I'm saying? So it means the effect is a transformation of the cause. So therefore, the cause is the philosophy, that means it's transformation, you know, by the language. It has to carry the same thing. Does that make sense? So you can't separate the things. So that's the problem here, is what we think is the cause and effect, what has it got to do with us? Material energy, what does it have to do with us, the soul? So we're the cause, and the effect is the material, you know, manifestation. Because our desire, it's manifest. Right, but the problem is the nature of the soul, Satchitananda, is not in the material energy, which is asat, achit, and, you know, unhappiness, dukkha. So it just doesn't match. That's why there's no interaction. So that's why, therefore, Krishna, who is Satchitananda, right, then he enters it, right, and with his potencies that are also Satchitananda. And then they, being in a hidden form, make everything function. We're attracted to what is hidden. Right? And then then we're able to identify with it, be attracted to it, you know, desire it, perform activities with it, and then we think that's what's making us happy, is the material energy, but it's not. It's the Lord and His potency. You know, so the masculine and feminine principle here, the real masculine and feminine principle at work is Krishna and His energy, His yoga maya. But we think that the masculine is us, the jiva, and the feminine is the material energy. So actually, even though it may be manifest through the material energy, we have no relationship to it. So what we're enjoying is not the material energy. We're dealing with the yoga maya. But because we don't understand it as yoga maya, because we're trying to be the enjoyer, and only Krishna is the enjoyer, therefore she transforms and manifests as Mahamaya. I'm saying, so you have the dead matter, and then you have that personality of that dead matter. So the potency is there, so that's what we're dealing with. So that's how Krishna moves in this world with his yoga maya, but we move with the same things in his Mahamaya. So the thing is the Shankya is correct in masculine and feminine, just it doesn't go far enough. So Krishna in the Gita says there are, means he calls the living entity Purusha, so which is the principle here in Shankya. But actually, if you look at it, we're Prakriti. We're just superior Prakriti. But we're the ones who think we're the enjoyers, so therefore we're classified as Purusha. That's why then there's the material energy, which is Prakriti. There's the Purusha, which is the soul. Then there's the supreme Purusha. Right? So both Purushas are in the body. One thinks it's enjoying the body. The other one sits there and knows nothing's there. So it just waits. And then when the jiva as Purusha gets tired of enjoying the material body, then it turns its attention to the Supreme Lord. And then at that time, then the two leave the body.
So every time that you guys discuss this masculine, it means it's a description of the conditions here.
Well, anytime the jiva is
discussed as masculine.
Yes, it's when he's masculine, then it's the Purusha Bhav, so it means the conditioned state. Because it means, you know, even if they're in a masculine form in the spiritual world, they're not called Purusha.
Because when you see the two birds enjoying, then at that point it's always described as enjoying. It refers to the
conditioned state, because otherwise they're servants. So in the spiritual world, you won't have that. So you have the masculine activities, but they won't be masculine by the principle of enjoyer. Only Krishna is Purusha. Alright? All the other, the cowherd boys and everybody else, even though they be in masculine forms, they're not Purusha. Right? They're performing those masculine activities in connection with Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. Right? Does this make sense? So you can see through here, it shows the two different levels, but it also proves how we're not the enjoyer.
So now the first point they're making, there's a chair, somebody wants to enjoy that chair, or that chair is not enjoying itself.
Therefore, the chair can't enjoy itself. It has to be applied on something else to create enjoyment. It's for someone else. So that means in that, we can't enjoy ourselves. We have to be for someone else's enjoyment.
It's such an obvious argument, but you never have a Western philosopher come.
No, because their point is that the bottom line, strip away everything else, it should be left with two things. I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. Like that. Okay. Second, it cannot be said that all objects are meant for Prakriti, because Prakriti is unconscious and is the material cause of all objects. It is the balance of gunas of which all the objects of the world are composed. Right? So in other words, you can take, because you have these different levels of cause and effect, but here their cause and effect is all happening within the material energy. Right? It's not so far he hasn't even introduced God here. Like that. So in Nyaya and Vaisheshika, then they've introduced God as a controller. He hasn't introduced that at all. So we're going to have to figure out you know, if he actually brings that in at any point at all, because so far he hasn't. Okay.
What does Vaisheshika mean, sorry?
Vaisheshika is the atomic theory. That's the previous philosophy. So we've already done Nyaya and Vaisheshika. Nyaya is Nyaya Vaisheshika. So Nyaya is Gotama and Vaisheshika is Kanada. Kanada, like that. So this is. Yeah. It's not Canada because they're not known for the atomic theory, so it must be Kanada. Okay, so now it is in its balanced form, is that nothing's manifest and it's its original state. But as that balance of the three modes starts to take place, according to the degree of imbalance, it creates all the forms that are here. We'll also say here they're saying it, looking at it by, you know, like the Ayurveda, when it's out of balance and in balance. So this balanced state here is just prakriti, and is just, you know, nothing's manifest. So the manifestation is a combination of the modes. So we'll also say that is, depending on the particular combination, you get certain manifestations. Like that. But they're not looking past it. So the cause is actually the material energy they're taking here, the cause and effect. So all things that are affected here all have their basis in the material energy, which is true. But what they don't see is above that you have the living entity as a cause. That they have an idea, a desire that they want. That desire then is manifested through the external cause. I mean, external effect. So therefore, the living entity's desire is the cause, or its karma is the cause. And then the manifestation is the effect. The same time, as you see, is the Lord. He's the original cause of everything. And his manifestation of his energies is the effect. Like that. So you have these three that are dealing here. So in this, they're only talking about prakriti itself. Prakriti is thus the potential or essence of all pain, pleasure, and neutral states, and cannot therefore be the enjoyer itself, just as even the greatest of men cannot sit on his own shoulders. The proprietor or utilizer of all worldly objects must consequently be a conscious being who does not possess the three gunas, and who is completely different from them in both their balanced and heterogeneous states. That transcendental reality is Purusha.
That's the second argument.
That's the second argument. So basically you're trying to say here, another thing is that they're showing that about the dead matter itself, the prakriti can't be the enjoyer because the modes and all that, because in this balanced state, nothing is there. It's only this unbalanced state, then there's manifestation. So that means there must be someone else who's enjoying it.
So it's not the balanced state enjoying the imbalanced state, that's what they're saying.
No, because it's unconscious, yeah. So it can't. And the thing is the thing can't enjoy itself. You know, just like you're the whole body, you can't enjoy sitting on your own shoulders. So because it's part of your manifestation, you can't actually separately enjoy it. You know what I'm saying? So that means it's an illusion that you think you're enjoying it if you're doing something. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's the... Third, all the objects of the external world, including the mind, senses, and intellect, are in themselves unconscious. They cannot function without guidance from some intelligent principle, and they must be controlled and directed by it in order to achieve anything or realize any end. That conscious self who guides the operation of the prakriti and its manifestation is Purusha. Right? So everything is dead matter, and so therefore being unconscious, how it's not controlling itself. Right? It's the jivas who are creating the imbalance in the modes of nature. Therefore there's manifestation. Right. The interesting thing that they at this point haven't pointed out is what actually takes dead matter and makes it manifest by the desire of the living entity, because it's not the power of the living entity. So all it does here is leave the jiva as the enjoyer.
Because the jiva is Brahman and Brahman is everything.
That hasn't come in here. That hasn't come in. So you can see is there's also an interesting weakness that's here, is that why would the material, I mean, all of them have it, but why, you know, God controls everything, he's above, he can, but why would he do it? that Nyaya and Vaisheshika don't point out. Because they don't worry about it, because they're all self-centered.
So this is also self-centered.
Yeah, all of them are self-centered, like that, unless it's Vaishnavism. There's Uttari Mimamsa, then, you know, with the Sampradayas, then that's proper. Then it's complete. But all the other ones are, in themselves, only part of that completeness. And so on their own, as they stand, they're not complete.
Because the practice you put together, Atman, Paramatman, right?
Here they haven't made any distinction as of yet. So, you know, because they're not worried about that. They're just looking at the material, the elements of the universe and how they're working. But they're not as interested in atoms. See, atoms can be there. Okay, it's unmanifest. It's atoms and it manifests. But who cares? And it's unmanifest. You know, it's not unmanifest state as atoms. But what does it got to do with you? You know what I'm saying? So in your practical life, you don't deal with the atomic theory. You know what I'm saying? You deal with, you know, what's going on here. Yeah, so cause and effect. That's what you're doing, because that's cause and effect based on your interests and activities. Therefore, you're getting good and bad results accordingly to the balance of the modes of nature.
Right. And your goal is to get...
That we haven't seen yet, but most likely it's to create the equilibrium. But it hasn't come to that yet. I think that's coming up on the couple of pages after. Yes. Fourth, non-intelligent prakriti and all its evolutes, which are by nature pleasurable, painful, or neutral, have no meaning if they are not experienced by some intelligent force. That experience is Purusha. Right? Because you've got pleasure, pain, and neutral. So depending on the mode that's there, then you're going to get, you know, how much. So if there's more goodness in it, there'll be more pleasure. If there's more passion in it, there'll be more pain. And if there's more ignorance in it, there'll be more neutrality. So to be able to perceive that has to be some conscious higher force. So that's the Purusha. I'm saying. So all these definitions that are there apply to Krishna. Just they unfortunately aren't applying it to Krishna, they're applying it to the jiva. But otherwise, everything that's been described here can be described there in the proper theistic state. That will be Kapila, the son of Devahuti's Shankya. But this Shankya is the atheistic, so they don't take it that far, they just stop at the jiva. Fifth, every human being wants to attain liberation and he be free from pain and misery. But whatever is derived from prakriti brings pain and misery. There is nothing different from prakriti and its evolutes, then how is liberation attainable? If there were only prakriti, then the concept of liberation and the will to liberate or be liberated, which is found in all human beings, in the sayings of sages and in the scriptures, would be meaningless. Therefore, there must be some conscious principle that strives for liberation. That principle is the self, Purusha. Right? In other words, the material world gives so much difficulty, you want to be freed from it. And so, and if all there is material energy, how would you be freed from material energy? You're just part of it. So if you're part of it, it doesn't bother you. You understand? So it's that is something different. So liberation has to be something separate. That means the person who's being liberated has to be separate from material energy. Because how does a part of material energy get freed from material energy? You know, but which is interesting if you apply this same point on the impersonalism, is they're saying the concept of jiva is actually created by illusion. So it's not part of Brahman. Right? So then if that's not part of Brahman, how technically would it be liberated? You know what I'm saying? So it's interesting how all these things kind of work themselves out. Okay. Does that make sense, all these? Proof of the existence of many selves. According to Shankya, there are many selves or conscious principles, one in each living being. there were only one self related to all bodies, then when one individual died, all individuals would simultaneously die. But this is not the case.
Right? Tell that to the guys who wrote the Matrix. Right?
The birth or death of one individual does not cause all other individuals to be born or die. Blindness or deafness in one man does not imply the same for all men. If there were only one self pervading all beings, then if one person were active, all the cells would be active. If one were sleeping, then all would sleep. But this does not happen. And there is therefore not one self, but many selves. Secondly, human beings are different from God and from animal and vegetable life as well. Okay, here he's introduced God. But this distinction would not be true if God, human beings, animals, birds, insects, and plants all possess the same self. Therefore, there must be a plurality of selves that are eternal and intelligent. Thus, it becomes clear there are two realities: Prakriti, the one all-pervading, unconscious material cause of the universe, and Purusha, the many pure, conscious, intelligent entities who are not subject to change. It is from the interaction of these two principles that evolution occurs.
Interesting that they only touched on God and then left it at that.
Side point.
Side point, little asterisk. God. The guy who runs everything. Yeah, yeah. Very small print.
The process of evolution of the universe. According to Shankya, the entire world evolves from the interaction of Prakriti with Purusha. This interaction does not refer to any kind of orderly conjunction, as in the contact of two finite male and female material substances. It is rather a sort of effective relationship through which Prakriti is influenced by the mere presence of Purusha, just as sometimes one body is influenced or moved by the presence of a thought. Evolution cannot occur by the self, Purusha alone, because the self is inactive. Nor can it be initiated only by Prakriti, because Prakriti is not conscious. The activity of Prakriti must be guided by the intelligence of Purusha. This cooperation between them is essential to the evolution of the universe.
So the living entity is inactive but intelligent, and the material energy is inactive and unconscious. So that means the combination between the jiva and the material energy, then the intelligence of the jiva is what makes the material energy active. Yeah. But they're missing the finer points of that's all being arranged by the Supreme Lord. At least at this point, it hasn't been brought out. And who communicates between the jiva, who is actually not actually really conscious of the whole material state? How would the jiva itself create all the forms that are here? Because if they could, then they could create whatever they like, and then why would they be dissatisfied with it? It's because they're not actually the controller and all that. So they don't know the process that it actually works. So if they knew the process, then, I mean, if they knew the process and were therefore affecting it, then they would be the actual controllers and therefore the enjoyers. But since they're not, someone else is actually a controller enjoyer. And so it's not being our position, we're dissatisfied with dealing with the material energy.
Because if they admit there is eternally many purushas, right? So who is dispatching between them? Because
but it is true that that's there, but unfortunately, so far for the implementation of their process to work, you don't necessarily have to recognize that. You know, just like you can heat up your can of beans in your microwave oven without understanding how the oven works, who made it, who made the can of beans, how the beans got in the can in the first place, you know, what poor guy out in the fields picked those beans. You know, you don't know any of that, but it still works. So all you have to do is figure out, you know, can of beans, open the door, put it in, close the door, push the button.
Remove beans from the can.
Remove beans from can. That's getting high tech. No, no. Wait a minute. You're taking it a step too far. You simply have to open the top of the can.
No, because it's aluminum. You're going to get Star Wars in there.
Really?
You can means in Maharaj you've been protected from microwave and I've been...
No, it means when I was a kid the cans were tin.
No, but if you put any metal in the microwave, it looks like Star Wars Episode 3 in there. You know?
But does it heat the beans up?
It will screw your own microwave.
But that's your mommy's problem. Your problem is simply to eat up the beans.
Okay, well, usually mommy recommends putting it in plastic.
Oh, okay. That's what you need. So that's why they always say take it out and put it into something.
Yes.
You know, in the recipes, they always say take it out and put it, because the normal recipe doesn't say to put it into this pot
nice
or that pot.
Styrofoam and plastic.
So you could put it in a plastic bag.
Yeah.
That's the weirdest thing in the world. you put a plastic bag on a fire, it melts, right? You put it in metal, it works. And this, you can't put it in metal, you have
but
to put it in a plastic bag.
But it will have the effect that if the beans become very hot, they will burn the plastic, but not the microwave.
I see.
So maybe that would have...
So is that the problem, is that when they put their... You know, very cold cat that's been out in the snow in the microwave to heat it up. The problem was they didn't put it in the styrofoam bowl first. Is that the problem?
And then the cat blows up.
No, just the cat.
But there's even been a fashion that people started to put their brain in the microwave.
Their brain?
Yeah, you open the door and you put a screwdriver to let the microwave know that the door is closed.
Put your head. And then what happens?
You have to get a buzz off.
I think we'll move on at this point of the conversation. We're going to end this conversation here.
Became kind of a drug.
Okay, so that's as far as we could go today. Because the next goes into two questions, and so that'll bring up a whole further discussion. The last thing to come up is God. Because it seems the early systems don't even discuss God at all.
In some point, it seems to be a better philosophy than Maya.
But it says here God is by definition eternal and mutable. So he could be there, but he has nothing to do with all this. So he doesn't even fit into the equation anyway. Even if he is there, he's doing his thing and we're doing ours, you know.
By the definition of the jiva, or the purusha, as inactive, that sort of ruled out the possibility of a spiritual world.
Yeah, it seems to be. Well, because the ultimate goal is liberation. It's just, you know, just basically extinguishing their existence. Oh, I see. So eventually you go back to... You know, God is like that, and God would be perfect. He can't have any desires, and so, therefore, if he was involved with this, that means there's desire, because that's what makes it work, so he couldn't be involved with this. So, therefore, there's no need to consider him in the whole equation. So, it's like, you know, so you can either accept him or not. It doesn't matter. He has nothing to do with this. You know, it's like you have, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, and then you have a pineapple. You know, so it's like they don't have anything to do with each other. So, it's like, you know.
Well, why would he create?
But he doesn't create, because create means then he's working with material energy, and only it's desire, material desire, that will work with material energy to create. So
somebody
he's not creating.
The material energy.
That none of them go as far as that. They never figure that one out.
Yeah, consider their own instead of going for some infinite regress, just assume that this is the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so you don't have to bother with it, otherwise you drive yourself
nuts. It's
like
the Big Bang theory, you know? Where the Big Bang came from, they don't address it.
Well, they don't bother with the Big Bang, because they know it. Because it comes from, the thing is, it's coming from Prakriti.
Yeah, but it's the same
but problem. Where the Prakriti comes from, that's not explained.
But it's the same problem. They do the same in other sciences. Where is it coming from?
Yeah, well, it's just, this is another aspect, because the main thing is the atomic theory. But it's just not so developed. So then they'll have elements of this also. Throw it in, why not? Into the primordial soup. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare